recorded live.
Welcome to Roz Treiber's Healing Community Talk Show. Today is Wednesday, May 28th, and my goal is to provide tips and tricks to live with joy even in the face of adversity and to accept each day as a miraculous gift. This morning, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome the Shalemu team from the Beth Israel Synagogue in Owings Mills, Maryland, Rabbi Jay Goldstein, Rabbi Joshua Neely, Sarah Shapiro, a licensed social worker, and Beth Phillipson, a registered nurse. This holistic team will share with you how the unique partnership of rabbis, nurses, and social workers attend to the mental, physical, and spiritual health and healing needs of a congregational community. And please, anyone listening, you may ask questions. When I prompt you to ask questions, each panel member will have distinct questions to answer and help you learn about how the community is healed. Rabbi Goldstein, I would like you to describe the concept and origin of Shalemut.
Thank you, Roz, and for inviting us to participate in the wonderful opportunity you give the community, in a sense, to approach healing in different ways. The word Shalemut, first of all, for those who are listening, comes from the Hebrew word shalom, which means wholeness, a completeness, and in a sense, in the way that we interpret it, the integration of the mental, physical, spiritual healing needs that are synagogue-based. The origins, actually, credit needs to be given to Rabbi Nina Beth Carden, who trademarked and began Shlemut in the investigation and how synagogues could best promote holistic healing back in the year 2000 with a grant by a STAR, which is Synagogue Transformation and Renewal, but decided to bring it to Baltimore in consultation and with a great deal of help in beginning this project of Jackie Ashkin on behalf of the Jewish Family Services of Baltimore. And we were very fortunate the first 2 years of our now having completed 3 years, we were funded by the Foundation for Spirituality and Medicine, which enabled us to really begin this project. Just to give you a brief explanation, Shlemut is really a partnership, as you described, of physical and mental health professionals, clergy, congregational volunteers, with the intent of providing an integrated web of services and support to the members of our congregation. Historically, of course, churches began in the late 80s with the concept of parish nursing, of the importance that a nurse could provide to a community and to a particular church and congregation. But Shlemut is the first time, at least in the Jewish world, that we attempt to provide really a holistic healing from an interdisciplinary group. It's a very authentic Jewish idea. Each and every morning we recite a Mishaberach for healing, and we refer to the healing of the soul and the healing of the body, that each dimension of ourselves, emotional and spiritual and physical, contributes to our health. Just a moment more. From a practical perspective, we have a wonderful opportunity over the last 3 years to meet each and every week on Wednesday morning, where we, in a sense, do a holistic triage of the various members of the congregation that have suffered losses or who are ill or going through other difficult periods in their lives. And this allows us a broader perspective to deal with the whole person and not just one fragmented, segmented part of their either spiritual health, their physical health, their mental health. And then we determine what would best serve the needs of the congregation. And I'm sure that in the process of all of this, Rabbi Neely and Sarah and Beth will share some of the different programming that has evolved as a result. Certainly, the concept of Shlemut has taken hold within the congregation and really outside of the High Holiday services, I think, over the last few years, served the broadest group within the congregation of almost any other program.
Rabbi, excuse me.
Go ahead.
As you described the triage component, can you tell me whether you get the people in that particular group, do they share specific issues that they have, or is it very general?
Well, the triage is done as professional staff based on number one, what we know about the individual, and number two, if we've given permission to share with the, you know, because this is something that has never been done before in congregations, we had to do a lot of planning and lay all the fundamentals. So most of us, for example, when someone comes to me with an issue, whether it's an issue over any kind of issue of healing, spiritual, mental, physical, I would need to get permission to discuss their case with our Shlemut team and to involve them, that is either Sarah from the social work perspective, Beth from a nursing perspective, whether clergy needs to be involved, whether our volunteer committee of chesed, which means righteousness and caring, that will provide other services such as rides and meals, etc. So generally the professionals discuss the needs with the permission of the individuals, but there are many cases in which someone will independently approach the nurse or the social worker and will not want the clergy to know, and that's perfectly acceptable as long as they know that all of the interdisciplinary services are available to them as part of Shlemut.
Thank you. That leads to the next question targeted to Sarah and perhaps Beth also. How many referrals have you received, and what are the most common reasons or types that you get these referrals?
So I can begin. And the referrals for the program have really been steady from the beginning of the program. And one of the reasons I think that that's happened is because there's a really relaxed and down-to-earth atmosphere in the synagogue, and I think congregants feel a certain trust and comfort level with the synagogue, and then that's conferred upon us as Shlemut team members. Also, we've been very accessible from the beginning, so if a congregant has a question about a normal life event or a problem, we're a convenient and comfortable first place to go. So through the first 3 years of the program, I think I'm speaking now from the perspective of social work consultation. Initially, I think the first year there were about 75 referrals, the second year in the upper 60s, and then this year a pretty big increase, and we're not finished the year, but so far 99 referrals. And it's really for a huge variety of issues. I would say that the most common reasons are bereavement, counseling and resource referral for aging parents and seniors, health issues, mental health issues, cancer support, parenting guidance, and behavior management. And then there's just a host of other issues as well.
And Beth, do you have anything to add to that?
I would like to add that my numbers have been pretty close to Sarah's, maybe a little bit less this year. And I get anything from, I'm on my way to the emergency department, can you meet me there, to, do you know a good doctor that I can go to, you know, things like that. In addition, I've done some programs. I've done a lot of teaching with AED, automatic external defibrillator classes, training faculty members in the preschool how to use EpiPens. I'm always available for BP and glucose screenings, which, you know, anybody can come in anytime and have a blood pressure or glucose checked. I did Medicare Part D workshops a couple of years ago in our first year when the new Medicare laws went into effect. And we even had a seminar on Jewish living wills that was really very well attended and informative. I get a whole host of calls for lots of different reasons, not just for being ill, but preventative kind of stuff, CPR, that kind of stuff.
These are very, very significant types of education that I find people really need in order to heal. Do you find that you are helping people to relieve themselves of fear or suffering as you do this?
Well, I know personally I've had many people tell me that they don't know what they would have done if I wasn't there. Sometimes it might just be that I referred them to the right doctor or the right facility, and I've had patients who truly believe that their outcome was better because they knew where to go for help and even for rehab afterwards. I also have done some hospital visiting with terminal patients, and you're really there more for the family than for the patient themselves sometimes. And many people have found that very comforting.
Rabbi, do you have anything to add about the amount of referrals you get?
I could add, and then I'm sure Rabbi Neely has something as well. I think that Shlemut over the last 3 years has really increased our clergy sensitivity to the wholeness needs, healing needs of members of the congregation. And there are ways in which specific examples over several years, thank goodness not more than one or two a year, where we truly needed this, all of the staff of Shlemut to help an individual and the family around them with all of their needs in a way that we could have never even envisioned doing prior to Shlemut.
Rabbi Neely, can you add?
Well, I definitely agree that it's, as a new rabbi, one of the things that I found most important in Shlemut is that it's helped integrate all of these different aspects and sort of expose me and make me more aware of the intricacies that people have for the need for healing. That it's not just a matter of giving a kind word or being there for someone spiritually, but that part of being there as a community is to also try and provide the resources to help deal with the practical problems and day-to-day issues that people have when they're going through different types of crises. And I think having that all combined in this package of Shlemut has absolutely reduced the fear and the anxiety that people feel when facing these sorts of problems.
One more just quick point. One of the fundamental principles, really, of Shlemut has to do with the power of location and access. In this world where we go to specialists in every single area, it seems that often there are artificial barriers that are put up between all of these different disciplines, the spiritual, the mental, the physical healing. And Shlemut, in a sense, works in a very active way to break down any kind of barriers that might exist between those disciplines and that might prevent what we're geared towards and looking for, which is a holistic response, a sacred holistic response to health and to healing.
I find that this kind of service is so needed in our community all over that we need to advocate for more funding for the ability to handle all of the needs, because people do need the connectedness, the information, and that support of the community, as well as the emotional healing. Does the grant or the funding source provide for continuation, for this to grow, for us to survey our members to find out, you know, even more specific needs?
Well, first of all, we did do a more formal survey the first 2 years when we had a grant from the Foundation for Spirituality and Medicine, and Jewish Family Service was very good about having both our congregation and also Ohev Shalom, which was the other congregation that participated in this unique initiative here in Baltimore. And the results were overwhelmingly positive. We did receive a little more than 5% response, which is considered to be pretty good in this context. But the grant ended a year ago. So we are in on our own a little bit, separated away from Jewish Family Service, and have created our own Shlemut. And the congregation itself has been funding it, and we've been looking for active donors, angels, as we might call them, that could see the importance of Shlemut and would participate. There have been several people that have been grateful enough to make significant contributions to the Shlemut program as a result of encountering what we were able to offer over the last few years.
I think that this is really an incredible effort on behalf of the congregation, simply because the scientific research is so compelling about enhanced immunity and healing when these kinds of services are provided. As a health educator and a cancer survivor, I participate in many different types of healing communities, and the connectedness and the access to that information and the sincerity makes a difference in the entire quality of a day or of a moment. I would like to ask Beth, does your role as a patient advocate for members present a problem for other healthcare professionals?
Patients fear that their doctors are going to be annoyed to have another listener in the office, and oftentimes they've been hesitant to have me come along to visits with them. And I've had to reassure them that physicians really appreciate my being there. Many times they will give me copies of the patient's medical records, of course, with their consent, so that they know I can spend more time with the patient explaining things that they might not have thought to ask in the office or might not have understood while they were in the office. I really had physicians be almost relieved that I was there, knowing that if their patients didn't get it the first time, that I would be there to explain it to them again. I do also ask questions that the patient might not have thought of or might be afraid to ask. So that the doctors appreciate that, too, because they know that the patient gets a better picture of what's really going on. I've never had any physician even show a hint of annoyance at my being there. It's usually they're really grateful that I'm there. And I have found that they're using me as a resource now. I give them my phone number when I'm in the office, and I've had more than one physician call me to ask for their assistance in managing the patient's care. So it's really become a circle of care now, which is really beneficial to the patient.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was done.
Oh, okay. And I know that patient advocacy is really is mainstream today, at least in health education programs. Hospitals have structured patient advocacy, and I would hope that perhaps even one of the education programs for the congregation community is to instruct patients how to construct questions that they should ask if they don't have the opportunity to have you there. It is such an overwhelming experience to be in a doctor's office and have your own anxiety, and people forget to ask the questions that are needed. And, again, they don't always hear what the doctor says. And sometimes it is important for the patient to let the doctor know that he's going too fast and they need to understand what the doctor's saying.
I find a lot of people are intimidated by physicians, and I always encourage people, even if I'm going to be there, to write their questions down ahead of time before they go to the office so that they have some idea of how they're going to direct the conversation for their care.
Rabbi and Sarah, do you find that you also need to instruct the patient, should I say, in asking certain questions or helping to, get questions from, answers from them about various issues that they may be embarrassed about?
I would say definitely. A lot of the work that I do is providing people with resource information and referral, and I often give them guidance in that process in terms of how to access the services and what kinds of questions they need to ask so that, that they can make sure that they're getting the services that they really need. I help a lot of people in problem solving and then looking to see what will be the best route for them to get the care and support that they need.
Rabbi Neely, do you have anything to add?
Well, I'm not often invited into to share in the advocacy stage in someone's office. However, when talking to people because of the Shlemu program, they realize that I am more informed than might otherwise be expected from a clergy member in the treatment that they are being received. And that allows me to discuss with them their position and their case and the spiritual side, and perhaps more detail than simply referring to hope you get better aspect.
Absolutely. I mean, you're reaching a different level of consciousness and, should I say, a feeling of love for themselves and accepting where they are.
Absolutely.
Okay. Rabbi Goldstein, do you have anything to share as far as being, a spiritual advocate?
Right. I think that one of the points which Beth may want to add to has to do with the fact, first of all, we've even had Shlemut advocacy in having Beth and Sarah attend family meetings around mental health issues. We've been forcefully advocates on many levels, and even more importantly, Beth is involving herself in some families on medical issues, has even advocated by writing letters to congressmen about the inequities in the medical system. Just one particular change, for example, when Shlemut was first envisioned and run under auspices of the community as well with the participation of Jewish Family Service, the nurse was an advocate but was not allowed, in a sense, to take an active role in healing. We discovered over the course of the first year and a half that was truly a handicap for the nurse to be unable to really fill some of the gaps that we found in our medical system of today. And so in the end, Beth got her own insurance and put us under the coverage so that she could do, in a sense, active nursing, sometimes in small ways, but yet at the same time, that meant so much to the various families.
You are providing such an invaluable service. I hope that people who don't access your services become aware of the significance of the kind of healing you provide. My concept of healing is really learning how to live in the moment and accepting what has been given and learning how to do the best with what you can and the resources you have. Your services provide that access, and that healing is not about curing, but being able to live a quality life on a moment-to-moment basis. How have all of you been promoting the Shlemut programming from the congregation? How does this message get to the congregation and to the immediate community?
I could address that a little bit. Beth and I each write articles that are included in the newsletter for the congregation every month, and we try to highlight a particular issue that might be of concern to people and give them some information and resources about how to address the issue. So that's one form of just promoting our services and letting people know that we're available. We also, every week, the synagogue sends out a weekly email, and we include in there what our hours will be for the following week, and also if there's any kind of upcoming program, we would advertise it there as well. We also have had a big poster board in the lobby of the synagogue, and we often will put up there what upcoming programs might be. Also on the door to our office, there are flyers advertising upcoming programs. And in terms of sort of individual referrals, for me, one of the interesting things is that each year, I'd say over half of the referrals for the social work services are self-referred. So, which says to me that the word is getting out to the congregation that these services are available.
I would just add that we have compiled, as a result of the various programs that we've run over the last 3 years, a list of resources within the community, which are now up on our website, on the congregational website, and we will be further developing access through the website of Shlemut-related healing programs. The other direct answer to your question, Roz, is that we have made a concerted effort to work with the various groups within the congregation, whether that's sisterhood, brotherhood, our Chazak over 50, within the religious school, the preschool, so that they become aware and each of the constituencies become aware of Shlemut and the kinds of programming that we've done. So we've actually run health fairs in conjunction with Sisterhood and Hadassah. We've done it with with the men's club, the Brotherhood as well. We've had a proposal to do one with teens. So that's been one of the ways that we've been able to reach out to as broad a possible coverage of members of the congregation.
It is certainly admirable work that you are doing. I would like to ask one question regarding forgiveness. I know that forgiveness is a very touchy issue with many people who are going through some kind of illness, and there is definitely a non-peace in their own soul because of some conflict. How do you address some of these forgiveness issues with these people?
Anybody want to participate?
Well, I have to say, I'm not sure this is the type of forgiveness that you're talking about, but I've had to have patients try to forgive the system, if you will. And Roz, as you mentioned earlier, I encourage them to live in the moment. One of our big obstacles has been to get Medicare to cover some of the hands-on kind of stuff that people need in home. And there's a lot of anger at the system.
Yep.
Believing that what they've got coming to them is not happening. And like you mentioned before, I just tell them this is the way it is. We need to work around it and just do the best that we can. And sometimes there's never acceptance. There's never a forgiveness of the system there.
And don't you find that it's important for people to forgive themselves for allowing the system or other issues to drain that healing energy, that if, you know, all of this connectedness and support, we can help people to, again, you know, love the moments they have because they're the only ones they do have.
Well, I truly believe that attitude is everything in the healing
mm-hmm.
process. And that the anger is really self-destructive and counterproductive. And
yes.
I try to encourage people to just let things go and just do the best with what we have. That's not to say I ever discourage anybody from writing to their congressman or their senator trying to be an advocate for change. But I find that there's when you get acceptance, you get more of a relaxation, and I think it's just much more conducive to healing to be in a better frame of mind and to just go with the flow, if you will.
And there's no question from a spiritual and a religious perspective that, you know, many of our holidays, many of the liturgical themes are created to give us the ability to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that each time we let go, one small pebble of the burden that's laying in our hearts and in our souls is taken away and released. And I remember once years ago, one of the members of my congregation that said her major goal in life is to stay away from energy suckers,
mm-hmm.
people that just suck away all of your energy.
That's right. I call them fun suckers. You bet.
Their personalities. And I think that forgiveness is difficult. No one ever asks you to forget. But there's a difference between forgiveness and forgetting.
Yes.
Forgiveness allows you to heal, allows you to become whole again. I've often encouraged families to make sure to say your goodbyes. Even the possibility of a contemporary aspect of an ethical will as
mm-hmm.
far as passing on the values that were the essence of your life. I just read yesterday about a company that's offering that now where you can write emails that will be sent following your passing. To family members. But it's absolutely true that forgiveness of the system and forgiveness of family members is an important part in the process of healing.
Rabbi, you mentioned the word feeling whole. Would you comment on that for a moment? To me, whole is being at peace with yourself and with God and with the people that you have lived with. Can you comment, please?
Rabbi Neely, you want to mention something about that?
Well, I think wholeness is something that is such a crucial concept, because so many people are not looking for wholeness in their life, but instead are just looking for things to be what they call normal. And normal should not be our goal. As you said, wholeness is finding a balance and a comfort and a support and a connection to every aspect of life, not simply avoiding the parts of life that make us uncomfortable. And that is something that is often started during a healing process, but it's something that's important whether someone is going through a crisis of illness or not, and a goal that needs to be reached for by healthy as well as those who are ill.
I think that an additional principle of Shlemut would be to provide comfort even in the absence of cure. We can't possibly heal, or not everybody that we deal with, the end result is going to be the one that was hoped for. But there, as was reflected in the story that needs to be, their story needs to be heard. Everyone wants to be noted and valued and comforted, even in the absence of a cure.
Absolutely. I need to reiterate the fact that healing to me is so much more important than cure, because healing allows you to live. There is no promise for cure of anything. And when we heal, we can live, and live, with no judgment, or at least minimal judgment, and to be able to let go, as you spoke, and to live with joy, the joy of living. And I think that I want to end this program with such accolades to the services you provide, and to know that it's not just for illnesses, but it is for daily living. And for anyone who wants to know more information, they could email me, roz@humorfusion.com. This recording will be available for those to listen to on TalkShoe and www.talkshoe.com, and on my website, both cancerrocks.com and humorfusion.com. I would like to thank all of you for participating, Rabbi Neely, Rabbi Goldstein, Sarah, Beth, for helping to promote the most necessary of all services to all of our communities, to help live with joy no matter what, and to love and have kindness for all. I thank you very much, and I hope that we can do this again sometime.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.